If you join us today, if it's your first time with us, thanks so much for coming. But more importantly than being the pastor of this place, I have a very important thing to tell you, and it's the interesting fact I learned this week. You ready for this? I didn't seem ready for this. Are you ready for this? Yeah, Rodney Fletcher is ready for this, so I'm just going to talk right at him. Lenny Kravitz, Al Roker, cousins. Boom. Yeah, right? Did that blow your mind like it blew mine when I learned that fact on Friday? Yeah, you're never going to look at Lenny Kravitz or Al Roker the same, because you're going to wish, like, now when Al Roker's reading, like, a little Betty Sue is 174 years old today, you know, that it's like Lenny Kravitz is going to bust out, you know, play guitar. I don't know. Anyway, that, like, blew my mind this week when I learned that, so I thought I would share that with you as well. Couple highlights, more importantly than Lenny Kravitz and Al Roker, if you can imagine that, that I wanted to share with you today. About stuff going on happening at Crossbridge. First thing I'll let you know about is connection card. When you walked in today, hopefully you picked up one of those green cards. That's a way for you to be able to connect with us, and likewise, we'd love to be able to connect with you through that this week. Simply fill that out. If you don't have a pen or you missed getting one coming in, no problem. We've got one online. It's available at crossbridgechristian.com/cc, so we'd invite you to go ahead and fill one out there using the power of the internet. Here's why you should fill this out if you've never done this before, is if you fill out a connection card, we will email you a Starbucks gift card this week for $5 for any drink of your choice, because I love you up to $5 worth. So we are really excited to do that, so you should totally do that if you haven't done that, and turn one of those in either when we receive our offering here in a couple minutes or just online here today. You can do that as well. Second thing I'll let you know this morning is a community group. So it's fall, or getting ready to be fall, hopefully soon. It's a good time to hop into a community group. Community groups around Crossbridge, our environment of about half a dozen to a dozen people that kind of meet together to grow as a follower of Jesus, and I think just as importantly, to connect with each other. This is not a revolutionary idea I'm getting ready to tell you about here today, most likely, but the idea of your continued presence somewhere oftentimes has a lot to do with dictating how connected or disconnected you feel in a particular environment. One of the more frustrating kind of spiritual conversations I have once every 2 or 3 months or so with someone is, man, I feel really disconnected. And oftentimes when I have that conversation with people, I kind of ask, well, like, hey, do you go to church consistently? Well, no. You know, hey, are you part of a group? Well, no. You serve anywhere? Well, I mean, sometimes kind of someone asks me, you know, like, well, hey, that's not very connected, right? Community groups are kind of a system that we can integrate into our lives as a way to grow more connected, to get more connected with some other people, and to be able to kind of feel a part of this community. And so we'd love for you to do that. Signing up is super simple, super easy. Just on the back of your connection card, there's a little spot that says, I'd like more info on joining a community group. And so if that's you today, please feel free to go ahead and fill that out. And we'd love to follow up with you this week and give you some more info on how you can be able to do that. Last thing I'll let you know, we're getting ready to receive our offering here this morning. You can give in service here in a couple moments. You can give online or via text using some of the info on the screen behind me. If you're new here this morning, there is zero pressure on you to give. Feel free to let the bags pass on by. You know, we're just happy to have you joining us here today. When you give, you help support our mission here, which is that we want to help disconnected people connect to God. As a church, the thing that gets our heart racing, the thing that gets kind of our pulse going, is the idea of helping introduce our 200,000 friends and family and neighbors and coworkers here in Leon County who are disconnected from Jesus, to help them discover a life-giving relationship with Him. And so so every time you give, you help fuel us in that mission in all sorts of big and small ways. And so if you do that consistently, thank you so much. If you're taking the first step to do that today, man, you know, awesome for you. Thank you so much. And we're just really excited about the difference that we believe God wants to use this community to make, and how He wants to use us to impact and change our world, our area. So now's an opportunity for us to continue to worship by being generous. If you have a connection card, you can drop that in as our First Impression team passes these bags around. And while they do that, we're going to watch this video that'll set up our message for today.
Don't move. Daddy will be there in a minute.
So So today, we're talking about training strong. And when I thought of training strong, I want to tell you the first person I thought of is my cousin, Marisa. So we're going to show a little picture here. So Marisa is the black lady in the back there. You can tell we're related very closely, obviously. Marisa is my cousin-in-law. I don't know if you can be cousins-in-law with someone or not. Can you? Okay, so I'm going to go with that. You know, we're in the South. We know what we're talking about when it comes to cousins. So Marisa right there. Marisa is like the strongest person I probably know. She's not even trying, like, that's just Marisa's natural arm right there. She's not even trying to flex, you know, and she's just got that much muscle. My cousin Marisa is she has a number of different kind of things, but one of the things that she does primarily is she's a personal trainer. And I've never done a personal training session with Marisa because I value my life and want to retain it. But my wife has informed me that if you do a personal training session with Marisa, it will bring you to your knees in tears. It will crush your spirit because Marisa is tough, man. There's like army commanders, and then there's Marisa. Apparently, yeah, that's kind of how it works in our family. And so, yeah, Marisa's a physical trainer, and I'm sure you probably have a friend or two like this on Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is, but you have, like, those friends that post, like, the workout videos and, like, photos after they do a workout and that kind of stuff, and Marisa will oftentimes post pictures of stuff she's doing to work out or photos of stuff she's doing to work out and videos, and I'm, like, I watch it, and, like, 5 seconds in, I've, like, strained something already because it's, like, so intense. It is so hardcore. She's, like, doing free weights one day, and some days she's doing like that thing where you hop up on the box, you know, and like one time I just tried to hop on the box without a weight and I didn't, and it was very embarrassing for myself and the community at Anytime Fitness. So she does that sometimes. Sometimes she's like lifting those huge things, you know, that you do the squats with, like those humongous weights where it's like, whoa, that's like the size of a person and you are lifting that right now. That is impressive, you know. Sometimes she uses those, I've never understood this. Maybe physical fitness people can help me understand, but she does those like band things that you put around your knees and stuff. If you've ever seen people, I don't understand what that does. Maybe if you're ever in a situation where someone ties you loosely at the knees, it's like, don't worry, guys, I know what to do. Okay, she does that. But one of the things that's interesting is anytime you watch Marisa's, you know, Facebook videos and all this kind of stuff, is she's never doing the same thing twice. Because people who are strong physically and people who understand how to train strong understand this very simple idea that there are some things that you do all the time, but there's also a lot of importance in keeping your routine mixed up, varied, so you can work new muscles or work your old muscles in new ways. If you want to grow if you want to grow physically strong, there's some stuff you should always do. You should always eat healthy. You know, you should always try and get 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night. You should always maintain an active lifestyle and, you know, and like, you know, not just work out and then lie on the couch all day, but actually be active as part of who you are and part of what you do, okay? All of those things are important ways in which we kind of grow physically strong. But also important is the idea of training strong, and that's something that we do all the time, but the way it looks is different. And kind of like my cousin, that the idea that I would train strong, but that I would actually vary my training so that I might be able to maximize my physical gain, is actually a really important idea. Now, you're all very smart people. We live in Tallahassee, Florida. I know you are smart. You already see where I'm going with this. Right? Spiritually, the same exact thing is true. Spiritually, there's some stuff that we should do all the time that should be a backbone of a strong and healthy spiritual life. The idea that I would, you know, read my Bible like we talked about last week. The idea that I would consistently pray, you know, each day or something like that, kind of like we talked about 2 weeks ago, is important. The idea that I have a rhythm weekly of play, of Sabbath, of rest, of refreshment from God, that's really, really important. The idea that even we would gather together like we are right now and worship God together is a really important thing for us to lean into and leverage, okay? Today is kind of a weird message because we've talked a lot about some of those consistent practices we do to grow spiritually strong. Today, we're going to focus on the training practices. We're going to focus on the spiritual equivalent of if you've ever seen like NFL players, you know, when they do that thing where they hopscotch through all the tires on the ground and that kind of thing. They don't do this, surprisingly enough. So if there's a vehicle on the sidelines that tips over with tires in the back of it and they all fall on the field, the running back can be like, I got this, guys. I know what to do. You know, they do that because that's how they grow agile. It's how they improve their explosiveness off the line of scrimmage, okay? We're going to talk about those kind of things that we do behind the scenes today to help prime the pump for some spiritual growth and for some strength tomorrow, okay? Now, to do that, this is probably the least revolutionary thing we could do. We're going to look at the life of Jesus. I know you're all like really surprised, like, whoa, that's kind of a crazy idea. But I want us to do this together this morning. And before we actually look, we're going to look at this section where Jesus taught about some spiritual disciplines that we can use to grow and train strong. Actually, I want to talk about some of the stuff that Jesus never really taught on, but oftentimes he modeled for us. One of the things that Jesus modeled for us was actually what we just finished doing a couple moments ago, which is singing. This idea of singing and praising God in worship is a really important idea for our spiritual strength. I think one of the reasons is because there's this thing about singing and songs and music that like grabs a hold of your heart in the way that nothing else can. Yeah, how many of you have like, there's like that song, and every time you listen to it, you're like transported back to like back to that place? Okay, good. Two people in the room have ever listened, have a song. That's good. Everyone else here is, okay, three. You know, everyone else is just sad all the time and sits alone in your lonely musicless world, okay? We all have, like, there's just a power of music and singing that can, like, bring us back. It summons something inside of us. And Jesus and his disciples, they would frequently find themselves in settings like this where they would worship together in a crowd, but it was actually something even, like, personally important to them. And this passage of scripture in the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew 26, he actually tells us at the Last Supper, that when they finish their final meal together before Jesus is going to be arrested, Matthew writes that when they had sung a hymn, then they went out to the Mount of Olives where they would go and pray. Now, just imagine this. You know, tonight you finish up your Sunday dinner with your family, and all of a sudden Dad looks around at everyone and says, okay, kids, what a friend we have in Jesus. Stanzas 1, 2, and 4. What? Yeah, like, whoa, yeah, that's kind of weird. That's a little intense, man, you know? But apparently that was kind of a regular practice for Jesus, right? This idea of we sing hymns, we worship God together in this way. That's something that we do. That is something that is key and integral to who we are, to how we grow strong. Another practice that Jesus oftentimes modeled for his followers and for us is the practice of celebration. So Jesus would oftentimes find himself at these feasts and religious celebrations that involve lots of food, lots of music, lots of fun. My father-in-law is actually part of a church where they still observe like all the Jewish dietary laws and feast days and everything. And I remember when my wife and I started dating, it felt like every 6 to 8 weeks, my father-in-law is like, yeah, I'd like to be around, but we got, you know, it's feast week at church, you know, and so we got to go and do this kind of thing. And it felt like it was happening all the time. And I was just kind of like, maybe I should become, you know, ancient Jewish or something because they like to party, you know, like they're all about this kind of thing. They're always doing that and hanging out. Like celebration was a really important part of their culture in a way that it isn't really something that we observe a lot today, right? The idea of us coming together to celebrate and kind of just have fun together. Like it's something we kind of do, I feel like at sporting events, you know? We do it when someone's birthday happens, especially if they're a kid. And that's pretty much it a lot of the time. You know, most of the stuff we do is kind of personal and private or just, you know, me and one or two friends. This is not the case in ancient Judaism. They do this all the time. And of course, Jesus, one of the things that people always had a problem with Jesus is he was always partying with all the people that you're not supposed to party with. All the religious leaders of the day, one of the accusations they would frequently hurl at Jesus is, yeah, Jesus, he's a drunk and a glutton, right? Like, can you imagine? Like, that's not really usually good for being a religious leader, yet Jesus is often accused of that. You kind of get the image of, you know, Jesus is hanging out at this party with all these unsavory characters, and he's kind of cracking up on the side, you know, and like people on the dance floor right next to him, kind of, you know, getting all up on each other. You know, Jesus' 83-year-old Southern Baptist grandma is very angry, you know, and shaking her finger at him kind of thing, you know. But like, hey, Jesus found himself frequently in the places where, you know, he's celebrating, hanging out, and having a good time with people, and You know, that seemed to be a part of his rhythm. You know, like that's a part of what Jesus did, right? Like that was some of the practice that he modeled for us that we oftentimes just let slide on by today. A third thing that Jesus did is Jesus practiced evangelism. And evangelism is this fancy church word that basically means, you know, helping bring people to an awareness about Jesus. Now, I do have to concede, Jesus had kind of a gimme on this because basically anytime he opened his mouth, he was telling people about who he was. So it was kind of a little simpler for him maybe. But this idea of evangelism, you know, we have a lot of bad images of this in our culture, right? We all have the image, or maybe you've encountered the bullhorn guy on the street corner. You know, you've encountered the preacher on TV that, you know, turns sin into like a force of sin, you know, he like adds all these syllables to the word, you know, and talks about that. Some of us, when we think of evangelism, you've kind of had the encounter with the Christian salesman, you know, who seems more interested in winning converts than caring about people, you know. And those are bad images of evangelism, but those don't make it wrong. That just means we practice it badly. That means we have room to grow in doing this in alignment with Jesus. But this is something Jesus modeled and told his disciples to do. In fact, quite often we see him doing that. His final words to his disciples were words where he basically said, "All right, guys, I'm done. Now I'm turning it over to you. It's your turn. Go and help people understand and know the truth about me." We kind of back away from it because we live in 2018 and everyone's kind of offended about everything. We get angry really easily and it feels kind of personal and it has a lot of baggage attached to us. But I think that's actually part of what makes it such a trained, strong kind of practice is the idea of, hey, when I step into those kind of conversations to invite people to take a spiritual next step, I'm having to trust God in a new way. Right, I'm having to get out of my comfort zone. Right, that's actually part of what God uses to help make us strong. Okay, but Jesus, we're going to focus in, like I said today, on a couple practices that Jesus actually taught on, and he taught on them in this section of teaching we have from him called the Sermon on the Mount. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus begins and he talks a lot about how do we interact with other people. What does it look like to love our neighbor well in God's kingdom? And he talks a lot about that. He explains what that's like. And then in chapter 6 of Matthew's gospel, he starts to turn the corner and he talks about what it looks like for us to relate to God in a way that's helpful and in a way that's life-giving in this world. And as Jesus does so, he begins by saying this. He says, "Guys, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. Because if you do, you will have no reward. It will be useless. It will not do you any good. You will have no reward from your Father in heaven." Okay? Jesus is starting to poke fun at the religious leaders of his day a little bit here. Because what they would do is they would kind of time their day around being in the right place at the right time when it was time to do something religious. And so they'd find themselves in the middle of the street like, which, you know, it's prayer time, and I'm just going to have to do that right here in full view of everyone to see. You know, look at how amazing and religious I am, right? Oh, there's someone in need right here. You know, oh, I'd love to help you with this large monetary donation right here that everyone can notice and see and be impressed by. And they would do stuff like this all the time. Now, we make fun of the Pharisees because we kind of imagine if someone did that in our world, we'd look at them as being kind of weird, right? Like if I walked through in the office somewhere and said, you know, just randomly in some hallway and went, you know, "Jesus," yeah, and did that kind of thing, right? My coworkers would look at me as being kind of weird and they'd be like, "Whoa, you need to get out of here, man. You need to take that somewhere else," right? They would find that kind of strange and odd in the same way that we might look at the Pharisees as strange and odd. But I want to challenge you that we might not be as different from the religious leaders of Jesus' day as we like to think. Because what the religious leaders kind of undergirded what they did was this idea that I'm not really sure that God works in the secret and in the quiet and in the private. And so since I'm not really quite sure I'm going to get a lot of return on investment for this, I might as well do it in a place where I get noticed so I can get some more credit from the people around me. Right now, I don't know that we practice that the same way, but isn't it true that a lot of us in this room, we kind of wonder that ourselves sometime? And instead of the Pharisees, where we just kind of do it in front of other people to get noticed or get extra brownie points, we just kind of, you know, give up, right? We have the same exact heart problem. We just practice it in a different way, don't we? What Jesus is trying to help us understand from moment one of this teaching is this very simple point, is that strong lives are built quietly. That they are built in the secret and the quiet places of our lives. They are not usually built in front of other people. If the only time I apply myself spiritually, I try to grow spiritually, is when the lights are on, you know, when people are in front, I'm not going to go anywhere. Jesus says, if you want to have a strong spiritual life, it's going to happen because you train and because you apply yourself in the secret and in the quiet, in the places where no one's looking, in the places where no one's really going to be there to necessarily hold you accountable. Like, if you want a strong spiritual life, that's where it happens, right? Not in public, not in full view. It happens in the quiet. It happens in the private. So then Jesus is going to turn his attention to some of the ways that we do that. And in Matthew 6, just the next verse, he says, so when, and when is a really interesting word because when implies when, right? It means this is essential, not optional. It means that this is assumed, right? This isn't up for debate. And Jesus says, so when you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets, like the hypocrites do in synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so your giving might be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Jesus says that we can train strong by giving generously. When we make generous giving to people in need part of our habit, part of our rhythm, part of just what we do, we are training to be strong. Now, when Jesus talks about giving, one of the things he talks about is financial giving, right? That we would give toward needs. We would give toward needy people in our lives. That we would give, I think, toward organizations and places like this one that are trying to make a difference with the message about Jesus in this world. That's why financial giving is so important, and we talk about that kind of every once in a while here, is because when we don't practice wise financial management, when we don't practice that kind of wise, we're denying ourselves an opportunity to grow, to be spiritually strong. And we're also, in maybe some ways, denying other people an opportunity to do that. But your giving that I think Jesus talks about here is not just financial. In fact, it's something a lot more scarier. Jesus doesn't put any qualifiers on it. He just says, hey, when you give to the needy, when you give to someone who has a need, I want you to do it generously. This week, I read some research from Barna Research Group, and one of the things that they said, they asked people, what's the most generous thing that you could do? And when I read that question, the first thing I thought of is like, oh, I'll give a huge chunk of money, preferably to Crossbridge Christian Church or Wesley Blackburn Limited, you know, like one of those two things, right? And surprisingly to me, the top answer that someone said, which as I read it, was like, oh, yeah, okay, I could see that, was the most generous thing I could do is care for someone who is sick. And the second answer that people gave most frequently was to give of my time to an organization. In fact, here was what surprised me the most, actually, was people didn't give an answer that was financially motivated until answer number four. So what that means is when we ask like 1,000 people, hey, what's the most generous thing you could do? Something financial was option four on the list, which kind of, I think, speaks to this idea that we understand the most valuable resource we own is not our money, because I can always get more money. The most valuable resource you and I own is time. And there's a real temptation, I think, for us to want to think, oh, there's a problem. Let me throw some money at it. Right, which is great, that's good, you know, giving generously that way is wonderful. But sometimes we kind of do that because we understand, yeah, it just seems like that's going to be a lot of hard work, right? Seems like that's going to be a lot of time. And part of what generous giving, part of what training strong by giving generously means is I give of both of those. But Jesus isn't done. He continues on and he says, so when you pray, Don't be like hypocrites, because they love standing in the praying standing in synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward in full. Now, we already talked about prayer a couple weeks ago in this series. You can go on our website, crossbridgechristian.com. You can learn more right there. What I want to draw our attention to is how Jesus talks about our prayer. He says, but when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. And then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Jesus is, I think, making a point to his listeners here that we can train strong by embracing the practice of solitude. Jesus says we can train strong when we embrace the practice of solitude. Solitude is simply the practice of me getting away to be alone with God. Now, lest we think that Jesus is just kind of given a command that he doesn't want to follow through on, okay, this is a hallmark of Jesus' life. If you read two chapters before Jesus delivers this sermon, he is in the wilderness doing a 40-day, 40-night fast alone with God, okay? So he's kind of speaking out of his experience right here. Later on in the Gospels, in fact, in several of them, we learn about how frequently Jesus got alone to be with God. Later on in Matthew, we're told that Jesus went up on the mountainside by himself to pray, and later that night, he was there alone, right? That's what Matthew 14, 23 tells us. Mark chapter 1, verse 35, okay, this is the beginning of Mark's gospel. He's saying, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went to a solitary place, a lonely place where he prayed. And Mark lays this out for us like this is a regular habit in Jesus' life. In the Gospel of Luke, a guy who interviewed eyewitnesses in the first century to all the stuff that Jesus said and did, Luke says Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God, right? Like he just got alone with God. You just got to do that. It's almost like the disciples, if they ever wondered, hey, where's Jesus? Has anyone seen Jesus? Does anyone know what Jesus is? Oh, he's probably up on the mountain praying, you know, kind of that thing, right? He's probably in his closet praying. You know, he's just alone with God somewhere to pray. Now, we kind of think of the idea of finding time to be alone with God, and we're like, whoa, we've got a lot of stuff going on right now. You got to understand my life a little bit here, man, you know? And I'm here to tell you, anytime you have time alone, you have time to be alone with God. If there's ever a point in your day where you drive somewhere and you are the only person in your car, that is time that is possible to be solitude. You know, those of you who have kids at home, Did you know that that time between your kids' bedtime and your bedtime, like you can do more than just watch Netflix in that time? It's like this new thing that they're trying right now. Like you could actually utilize that time for other things, if you like, I don't know, solitude with God, right? College students in the room, right? I know how it goes, because believe it or not, I were one of you back in the day, right? And I remember how it went, because I'm like, man, I'm so busy. I got so much stuff to do. Man, I'm waking up at the crack of 8:55 to get to my 9:30 class. Man, this is so hard. I barely got time to fit in my 2-hour nap today, you know, like or whatever. Like, hey, if you have time to nap, you have time for solitude right there, okay? Well, you can't usually do the two at the same time. You have to pick one, okay? But I'm here to tell you, man, you got time, okay? All of us have time for solitude. The challenge is, am I going to actually set it aside to do it? But Jesus, again, in typical Jesus style, he doesn't just stop there, because he keeps going. And Jesus says that we can train strong when we are not just alone, but when we are silent before God. Because in the very next couple sentences, after Jesus talks about getting alone with God, he says this: when you pray, don't keep on babbling like pagans, because they think they will be heard because of their many words. Jesus says, do not be like them, because your Father knows what you need before you ask them. Jesus lays out for us as his followers, sometimes the most spiritual thing I can do when I am with God is to shut up, right? Like that I would be silent, that I would listen, that I would be still, that I would seek to, I would just like put my phone on do not disturb. I would just kind of let all the stuff that rolls around in my mind and your mind all the time, you know, that would just set that down for a second to be alone with God and to be silent before God. We've been doing these strong challenge cards, and some of you, I know when we did the prayer week, one of them was be still, and like the whole challenge was you had to pray for 10 minutes and you couldn't say anything. You just had to like listen. And I know from talking to a few people last week who came up to me, they're like, I hated that card, right? I hated doing that challenge. That was terrible, you know? But man, it is so valuable, right? If you just kind of thought of it this way, you had access to the God of the universe. What am I doing talking all the time? Right? Why wouldn't I want to listen? Why wouldn't I want to be silent? You know, 3,000 years ago, there was this ancient piece of wisdom literature that's a part of our Bibles today called Ecclesiastes. And the writer of Ecclesiastes says at one point, you are God in heaven and I am here on earth. I will let my words be few. I will allow my words to be limited because I understand this relationship. I'm not the superior party, right? So Jesus goes on, he gives us the Lord's Prayer. He prays that and kind of gives that to us as a model prayer. And then he finishes up with, he's like, oh yeah, one last thing I want to make sure to tell you about. When you fast, again, essential, not optional, assumed, not up for debate. Right? Jesus' MO is, I assume you're going to do this. And every 21st century American in the room was like, Jesus, come on, man. This is no way to do it. Like, Jesus, come on. You don't understand how this works. You know, Jesus, the only time I want to fast is when it's part of my diet plan. Okay, that's when I'm really interested in fasting. But don't make me do this. You know, don't make me be a part of this. And Jesus says, no. Jesus says we can train strong by getting into the habit of fasting. Now, let's just talk a little bit about what fasting is. Fasting is this practice of I go without something so that I might draw near to God. That's all it is. Now, normally when we think about fasting, we think about fasting from food, right? Because we kind of have a couple blocks already in our day where we eat, you know, where we spend time, you know, with food, you know, which is kind of a big deal. And so normally we do that, and honestly, through the centuries, that's kind of the most common way to do that. But fasting doesn't just have to be food. Fasting can be TV. A few months ago, those of you who are part of our church, we did this message series, and for a week, we fasted social media, or we asked you to fast part of that as part of your habit for that week. You can fast. I have a friend who a few years ago, she and a group of girlfriends got together, and they decided that they were going to fast all of their unnecessary spending, and they were going to give everything that they saved away to people and charities in need. So, like, literally that month, the only checks and stuff she used her card for was, like, her rent and her groceries and, like, gas, I think, and that was it. That was, like, the challenge. And when we fast, one of the things we do is we use the time we'd normally spend on or with that thing that we're fasting. And we use that simply to draw near to God in some way. So, hey, I use this time while I'd normally be making breakfast to open up my Bible. Or I'd use this time at lunch to, you know, say, using 20 minutes on my lunch break, I'm going to use 20 minutes to pray and kind of seek God on something. A few weeks ago, I was facing a decision, and I really didn't know what to do and kind of felt like it was hanging on me to make this decision. And so I was just kind of like, God, man, I really need your help. And I kind of feel like I should probably do this and fast. And so I did, and in kind of a really cool way. I saw God answer a prayer, kind of give me some direction, which was a really neat thing to discover. Fasting in the scriptures, it's always associated with closeness with God. It's associated with us drawing near to him. It's associated with answers to prayer. It's associated with help in decision making, right? Like fasting, if I was just, you know, going to sit you down and say, hey, would you like to do something that will help you accomplish closeness with God, ability to make wise decisions and answers to prayer, you'd probably go, yeah, that sounds good. And I say, well, you'd have to not eat food. You're like, well, I'm out, tap out, you know, uncle, you know, whatever. Like, I'm not interested in that. But Jesus says, no, man, fasting is part of how we train strong. It's part of how we grow close to God. But Jesus, he elaborates on it a little bit. And this is where we're going to finish today. Jesus says, when you fast, don't look somber as the hypocrites do, the religious leaders, because they disfigure their faces to show others that they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face so it will not be obvious to others that you're fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Now, if you've been paying attention, you've probably noticed each time Jesus has finished his little spiel on a new train strong practice, he always ends with that little statement, right? Your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Okay, now that is very intentional on Jesus' part. You know, it wasn't like Beetlejuice, 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 right? It was like, no, this is him actually using a rhetorical device to try and help us understand something that's important to him. By Jesus repeating that phrase several times, here's what he's, I think, trying to communicate, is this idea of God rewarding what is done in secret is really, really important to Jesus. And what I think Jesus is trying to draw our attention to through this whole time is that the ultimate issue when it comes to training strong is trust. It's trust. It's the idea that when I get alone with God, do I really believe that's something he's going to reward and do something with? Or do I just kind of think it's a waste of time? When I go without food or without social media or without TV or without, you know, whatever it is, do I think that's something that God is going to reward, or do I think that's something that is going to end up being wasted? And we don't like to vocalize questions that way, right? Because it's God and we feel bad. We're kind of in church, you know, but it's a movie theater, so it's like semi-church, you know, so we feel a little bit better, right? And we don't want to kind of, you know, verbalize it in that way. But really, at the end of the day, the reason we don't do a lot of this stuff is because we're not really quite sure the return on investment is going to be worth what we paid. And Jesus is daring us as his followers to trust him. And your faith is never going to get any stronger than the level of trust that you are willing to display in your Heavenly Father. The confidence to follow him, to do what he says, even when I'm not really certain that it's going to work out the way I planned or expected. This week, those of you who've been tracking with us in the series, you've got some of those decks. We've got like two or three more, I think, out in the comments area. If you're new and you want to pick one up. But every week, we've had these cards for each week of this series, and we've dealt out ourselves some challenges. And this week, you know, if you've been tracking with us, we're going to move to the training part of the deck. Now, I'll just be really honest with you. I kind of do an overview of these each week before I get up and preach. And I got to tell you, reading through some of these challenges, I think this is going to be the hardest week personally for me. Maybe this won't be for you. I'm just able to speak for myself. And I think what's operating behind each of these challenges that we're going to embrace and engage together is the idea of, do I think that God is going to reward me as I seek him? Do I really believe that my Heavenly Father, who sees what is done in secret, is going to like do something with that? Or do I just think it's going to be a waste? The question we're asking is, can I trust God? I want to submit to you, hey, I think you can. I think you should. I believe that you're going to see God at work in some way in your life if you will. And it's by submitting ourselves to these disciplines, to these practices, to engaging with these ways that we train strong, that we actually take the first little baby steps in discovering that. So Crossbridge, today, my encouragement is for us to discover that together. Let me pray for us. Father in heaven, I thank you so much for all that you've provided and given to us, your people, your followers. Jesus, it's my prayer that as we leave this place today, that we might see you be a rewarder of us as we seek you. Jesus, thank you for illuminating and highlighting different ways that we can grow strong as we follow you. And Jesus, it's my prayer that you would lead, guide, provide, help. As we take these baby steps, these first steps, or these next steps this week to train strong. Follow you. I pray this in the strong and powerful name of you, the God in heaven. Amen.